You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The Diamondbacks are getting close to wrapping up spring training, just like all other teams. So that's very exciting, quite frankly, because spring training's been going on a long time. Let's talk to Steve Gilbert, who is out there, and he's always out there in Arizona, right? Allison Footer. Steve, it's not like people, I guess in your organization that you cover, it's not like everyone's just dying to get out of Arizona because they're leaving spring training and going to Arizona. But I guess everyone's kind of ready for the regular season to start, right? This is sort of when it starts getting to the point where spring training games maybe get a little tedious?
Yeah, I think so, Allison. And, you know, it's not like they're going to be packing. Well, I guess they do pack up a little bit to go about 10 miles east and west of here to Chase Field. So it's not that big a deal, but it is to actually get games that count and games that matter. And so I think that everybody at this time of spring is looking forward to that. Diamondbacks still have a bunch of decisions to make, though, so they're going to need these last 10 days or so to make them.
Yeah, so is there a rotation competition or is there not? It seems like there seems to be a starting five that's been decided upon, but then they're sort of saying that maybe it's still a little bit open. So what's the status there?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to see Shelby Miller, Zach Greinke, Taijuan Walker, Robbie Ray, Patrick Corbin not being in the starting rotation, which is your five guys. Archie Bradley, though, has pitched well of late. He's shown signs of really developing not just a third but a fourth pitch in terms of changeup and his cut fastball, which he started throwing. So I think that they don't want to call that race just yet. But it certainly looks like right now that the rotation is set. But again, you know, stranger things have happened, and I think they don't want to discourage Archie because he's really having a good spring here towards the end and is somebody that, you know, you're always going to need more than five starters. And he would be a guy that if he does end up going down to start the year, certainly could be seen sooner rather than later at some point during the season.
I read some interesting things about their philosophies on shifting. So they're figuring things out a little bit. Seems like they're going to be utilizing it more, I guess hopping right into modern times. But there's a method to it, right? It's not just moving everybody over at a left-handed batter. There's placement that needs to be studied, and I guess the Diamondbacks might be studying it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, normally when you shift on a left-handed hitter, the second baseman goes into shallow right field, and either you bring the third baseman to kind of be behind second or to the right of second, or leave the shortstop over on as a lone fielder on the left side, or the shortstop slides over a little bit and the third baseman stays over on the left side. But the Diamondbacks have tried a bunch of different things, moving the shortstop all the way over to shallow right field, leaving the second baseman behind the bag at second and leaving the third baseman over on the left side of the field. They've tried all kinds of different combinations, and I guess the thinking behind it is to try to find where guys are the most comfortable in fielding those balls. And that's something they said they're still trying to get a feel for, you know, who's comfortable for seeing balls over on the left side of the second base. And does it make sense to move someone from the left side of second base over to the right side if they're not comfortable as comfortable over there? So seems like they're taking an open mind and might see a little bit different kind of shifting in terms of, you know, who does the actual shifting than we've seen in years past.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're kind of have to make themselves comfortable, right? I mean, it's hard to say, well, we're not going to shift on someone because this guy doesn't really field balls very well on the other side of the bag. Maybe is it a matter of needing to get more reps in doing that? And maybe
yeah, it's more like, for example, let's say, and this is just an example, and I don't know this, let's say Jake Lamb is more comfortable seeing balls on the left side of the infield, then they can leave him over to be the lone guy over on the left side of the field and shift the shortstop all the way over. If the shortstop is more comfortable seeing balls on the left side, then maybe they leave him as the lone guy on the left side of the field and shift the third baseman over. So that's kind of what they're playing around with. It's not a question of whether they'll shift. It's just a question of who's going to do the play the various positions in the shift.
That's very interesting. They really think about that, that they really have to kind of break it down that way. But, that is one of the useful things about spring training. Another is to make sure that the guys that are maybe trying to nurse their way back from an injury are going to be ready for opening day. AJ Pollock, of course, somebody that we have our eyes on for various reasons. Is he nearing a return?
Yeah, it seems like it, Allison. On March 20th, he played in a minor league game. He said it was kind of weird. They didn't let him run the bases. He ran the bases before the game, but they didn't want him running the bases in game action. So he said it was a little weird to swing the bat and then have to head back to the dugout and have somebody else do the running for him. But so he's scheduled on March 21st then to play in another minor league game and actually do the base running. Wednesday, the 22nd, is an off day for the team, and then they were going to reevaluate on Thursday to see if he's ready to come back into Cactus League action. He says he hasn't felt anything in that left groin area where he had the tightness that forced him to leave the game about 10 days ago.
It seems like, I mean, would you say the Diamondbacks are pretty pleased with just how the spring has gone? I mean, there's really, knock on wood, and of course there's time left, but catastrophic things haven't really happened. It seems like things are sort of taking shape a little bit. Maybe the rotation has a chance. I mean, how do they kind of view their spring at this point?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they are optimistic. I think as long as A.J. Pollock really is not has any kind of serious injury, which it doesn't appear to be, the only kind of glitch is just Manny Tomas has that oblique injury that's kind of hampered him. But other than that, they feel like, you know, the rotation has looked pretty good. They're still trying to sort out the bullpen here with 10 days left, but they've had some guys that have looked good. So and the lineup has never really been a question, but a number of guys that they're going to be counting on have swung the bat well during the spring. So I do think they feel pretty good about it. I think, you know, they're also the guys that were around here last year when they had such a great Cactus League record and then opened the season and everything went south are not putting much stock into the spring. But certainly it's been a positive one for them so far.
All right. Well, on another note, let's talk food a little bit, because the Diamondbacks always have several new and strange and innovative things that they introduce to us when the new season comes around. I was actually there on opening day last year, and I got to experience the glory that was the new grilled cheese stand. But in addition to a lot of different things that are happening, they've got a new Churro Dog 2.0. Oh my God. It just, I don't even really know where to start. It's frozen yogurt, and that would be the last of the semi-healthy things that go into this. So there's donuts, Oreos, Oreo crumbs, strawberry sauce. So what is it about the Diamondbacks that they feel the need to outdo their already outlandish food choices?
I think that's definitely a trend in Major League Baseball, and the Diamondbacks are at the forefront of that for sure. I mean, they've also got I saw a bacon-wrapped pretzel baguette that has ham and it is stuffed with ham and cheese. So, you know, it's all kinds of different options at Chase Field, I guess, for food. But, yeah, the Churro Dog I thought was pretty successful as it was and pretty good as it was. And now I guess in the interest of reporting, of course, I guess I'll have to try that Churro Dog 2.0 just to give people a full report on that.
I mean, really, it's a tweetable moment, right? So none of this is really happening unless you're able to put it on social media. And that's like that goes hand in hand with social media and this crazy food. So it's guaranteed that you're going to get a lot of hits on this.
It, far more than I will if I'm discussing baseball strategy on Twitter, I am sure. That is absolutely true.
I tweeted a picture one time of Pete Rose and Johnny Bench standing next to each other at a Reds event. And then I tweeted a picture of a slice of pizza that the Reds PR people brought me in the press box. And the slice of pizza got three times the amount of hits as a picture of Pete Rose and Johnny Bench.
People love their food, Allison. People love their food.
It wasn't even a great piece of pizza. It was just a piece of pepperoni pizza. But, yes.
Well, if it came from Rob Butcher, it couldn't have been a great piece of pizza. So he's that thing.
It was. It was definitely a local pizzeria that I personally love, but not everybody does. Okay. Okay, we're going to stay on schedule here, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much, Steve. Talk to you next time.
Allison, always my pleasure. Take care.
Thanks. The Giants are inching toward opening day, and they are attempting to figure out their roster and navigating through some injuries. Let's catch up with Chris Taft on all that is going on with the Giants. I am Allison Fetter. Chris, I guess we'll start with Will Smith, because that is a huge bummer. So he seems to have a sprain and a strain in his elbow. Man, he was maybe supposed to be that setup guy. So what's going on with him, and how much does that hurt the Giants?
Well, what's going on with him, Alice, is that he's going to get a second opinion from the Dodgers team doctor of all things. I shouldn't joke about that. he's Dr. Neil Ellitrash. He's very accomplished, and this goes on in baseball all the time, where a particular doctor may have specialized in a certain discipline, and a rival team will send its player to him to be examined. So Will Smith's going to get examined. They'll get the second opinion, and if they decide he needs surgery, they'll perform it probably pretty quickly here. But even then, he would, in that event, keep the out for an indefinite period, maybe a majority of the season. I don't know. I can't put a time table on it without until they go in there. But they're going to have to look for another setup candidate or two. It may end up being set up by committee, so to speak, for the Giants for a while.
And that's, that's not good news for anybody, but of course the Giants have always, we've been talking about their bullpen issues for quite some time now, and we sort of thought that they had gotten that straightened out. So really, it's not like you get really deep bullpens from team to team, but this could really be problematic for them.
Well, you're right, Allison. It's in a way, Will Smith was like he's a really handy guy to have around, in that he could be, he could serve in a setup role. He could be a lefty specialist. He could be he did well against right-handed batters, so he could pitch complete innings. And so you lose a lot. So they've got a lot of young guys who have a lot of skills, but not that kind of experience. So I don't think they even know right now what they're going to do.
Well, moving on to happier news, Madison Bumgarner. there's only really a couple guys who could create news in spring training by only pitching a couple of innings and then leaving, and just kind of having a normal day that way. But Madison Bumgarner, if he leaves after two innings pitched this late in the spring, then everyone kind of panics. But really, he just left because he wanted to do the rest of his throwing in the bullpen, and he has had quite a workload, I guess, in the last couple of years. So he feels pretty strong, right? There's no issues with him.
I'd say there's virtually no reason, maybe just flat out no reason, to worry about Madison Bumgarner. He's the day he pitched those two innings in the game, he essentially threw the equivalent of three or four more innings out in the bullpen. So he got, as they say, got his work in. He knows where he needs to be. He's been around long enough now to the point where, like I say, he knows where he needs to be. He knows what, he knows how to pace himself, which is an issue here this spring with the extra long spring due to the World Baseball Classic. And I expect another, strong year from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and the last thing I want to ask you about was Barry Bonds. It was announced that he's going to be a special advisor to the CEO. I think that's the role he was always supposed to be in. I couldn't understand why he wanted to go be a hitting coach for the Marlins. It turned out he didn't want to be a hitting coach for the Marlins. it's just a lot of work. I don't know if people understand quite how many hours go into being a hitting coach. They're the first ones in. They're the last ones to leave. You really have to want to do it. But to be kind of in this role that Bonds is going to enter, it kind of feels right, right? I mean, he's beloved there, and he can do some good things in the community. How was that received?
Oh, very well. And I think, fans will welcome him with open arms. It's great that the organization still does. Little period, for example, the play ball lunch next Friday. It's an annual pre-opening day type function. Barry Bonds will be there. Just all he has to do is show up, and that's his job, just to be Barry Bonds and be available. And then he actually sounds like he's looking forward to going around the minor leagues once the season begins and checking in on the hitters there, the prospects they've got, at the various and sundry minor league locales. He's ready for that. So, and of course, he'll pop in on a major league team every so often. He should be a very welcome presence and a helpful one too.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me to sort of observe these former players, these big names, and then the team hired them on to be special assistants. And it can go a million different directions. So I'm not going to specifically name some of the players that sort of have the titles and you don't really see them a whole lot. But a good example of someone who is full on into it is somebody like Luis Gonzalez, who became a special assistant for the Diamondbacks many years ago, soon after he retired, has an office at the ballpark, goes to the minor leagues. He is involved with everything. And so it kind of is dependent on the player to make of it what he wants it to be, right? I mean, Barry Bonds could really get into it, or he could throw out first pitches and kiss babies and call it a day. So, you know, it sounds like it's kind of wide open in that way.
Yeah, very true, Allison. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Barry, because you've got, you know, they still have Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, and Orlando Cepeda, you know, great, great Hall of Famers doing work for them. But, you know, in fairness to them, that they are older. They can't do as much. They can't be as active as they once were. So here comes a Bonds to fill the void, so to speak. Not that there's a great void, but, you know, if things work out between him and the club, then there's your foundation for the new, you know, era of club spokesman or whatever. You know, Mays, McCovey, Cepeda will be replaced by, you know, Bonds, Will Clark, Rich Aurelia, this spring Cody Ross, you know, has really gotten into his coaching gig here at spring training. And so, you know, there'll be some, you know, new icons and, you know, necessary ones just due to the passage of time.
Yeah, the Giants are so lucky that they just have iconic names from every generation. Like they can, I hope they realize how lucky they are. It is fascinating to really watch them. You know, when they, like, host postseason games or World Series games and you bring out the greats from years past, and it's like some of the greatest players who have ever played the game, and they're just all standing out there still representing the Giants. I'm sure the Giants have a great appreciation for that.
Yeah, they do that. They honor the past as well as anybody. And they make it, they somehow find a way to make it relevant to the present. And, you know, that's a good thing. You don't live in the past. You use it to steer, I guess, it'll show you how to be, you know, the future generations of players, you know, show them how to be successful. I mean, I didn't have a chance to write about it this spring, but a couple of their young outfielders received some tips from Willie Mays. I mean, come on, you know, these guys, these kids, you know, they'll be, if they make the major leagues, they're like the next generation of big leaguers, and they can honestly say that they were affected by a guy who started playing baseball in 1951. You know, so it really is a neat thing.
Yeah, it's amazing, especially much the old footage of them and in their heyday. And it's pretty awesome. All right, Chris, thank you so much. Get on with your day. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, thanks, Allison.
The Padres are gearing up for, I guess, what we could call an interesting season. I think it's fair to say this 2017 season will be interesting for the Padres. Let's talk to AJ Cassavell as spring training comes to a close here very soon. I'm Allison Footer. AJ, yeah, let's just start talking about the rotation. Is there a scenario in which the Padres' rotation could actually surprise us and be okay?
It's hard to see that happening only because the lack of, I guess, high-end, high-quality options. I think there is a scenario in which a couple pitchers could surprise us and be pretty good. I think if you look at last season, what happened with Drew Pomeranz, I think there's a couple candidates for that potentially, for that kind of a bounce-back season if they make some changes with Jolys Chacin and Trevor Cahill. There's some guys who could surprise us individually. I think Luis Perdomo could have a solid season. He's looked very good in spring so far. But on the whole, the Padres' rotation is obviously one of the weak points on the team. And one of the other, I think, primary concerns there is that you go back and look at last season, how deep into games these pitchers worked. Well, they generally didn't make it through the sixth inning. So it's concerning on a couple levels. The Padres don't want to put too much tax on their bullpen. It might force them to carry an extra bullpen arm. So to answer your question, I guess I can easily see one or two, three guys maybe surprising. But the rotation as a whole, just there isn't enough. There isn't the depth that I think the Padres would like to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you brought up a good point, and that would be more of my concern just as far as getting through the season, because they're clearly not going to be contending for a division title. So they need to be able to get through 162 games. And so it's not just carrying that extra pitcher, but there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching, I think, throughout the season. And they're going to have to – there's going to be guys that are going to have to be called up for a couple days, and guys are going to have to be sent down just to get fresh arms in there and not to wear these guys out. Is there a crop of any kind of depth, maybe what veteran guys or just guys that they'd be able to sort of shuffle in and out to the big leagues that are going to be at AAA?
Yeah, there's some. They signed Tyrell Jenkins in the offseason, or they claimed Tyrell Jenkins and Zach Lee during the offseason. So they could provide some depth from AAA. Walker Lockett is a prospect who's looked really good in spring training so far. He just got sent down to minor league camp, but I think it's very reasonable to say that he'll make his big league debut this season as long as he continues on the path he's going. Denilson Lamet could be a little farther off, but he's a AAA guy. He's a relatively highly touted prospect, probably not as close as Lockett, but they have some options at the minor leagues in terms of just eating innings. I think one of the things you'll see is the Padres are going to go into their bullpen early this season. They've already kind of made it clear that they with certain pitchers at least, they might only go a couple times through the order and try and flip the matchups in their favor. In that sense, I wouldn't be surprised if they carried a couple extra starting pitchers just in their bullpen, a guy like a Christian Friedrich or a Jared Cosart or even Trevor Cahill. All of them, Cosart less so, but all of them have some bullpen experience and could potentially be like 2-3-inning guys out of the bullpen. So I think the back end of the Padres' bullpen is actually one of its strengths. If for some reason it doesn't show in numbers, you might have to do some deeper digging into that and just see just how taxed they're going to be during the year because of the lack of starting depth. But I think the Padres are comfortable enough with their AAA pitching options that if they have to shuffle some guys or if they deal with one or two injuries, they have guys who can come up to the major league level and eat innings.
Okay, next question. How do the Padres plan to use Christian Bethencourt and his versatility on a day-to-day basis? Is there a plan there?
There's no specific set plan. So far what they've done in spring training is that on the days that he's pitching, and he's a pitcher only. He doesn't necessarily go through the batting side of things. And on the days that he's hitting, or the days that he's not pitching, he's a hitter and goes through all that, and maybe throws a bullpen session also. During the season, they want to combine the two. They want him to be available as both. And he's obviously not their starting catcher. So I think the plan for Bethencourt is just to make him available in whatever capacity possible. I don't think you'll see him starting a game at catcher and then pitching, but I think it's very possible you see him enter a game, you see him on the bench for a game, and aren't sure whether he'll come into the game as a catcher or a pitcher. Andy Green spoke about the scenario of potentially maybe double switching and have Bethencourt go from pitcher to catcher mid-inning or one inning after the next. It doesn't sound like that's something that's going to happen very often during the season. I think when Bethencourt gets in the game, it'll either be as a pitcher or as a catcher exclusively, or in the outfield too. He'll see some time in the outfield. I think essentially what they want to do with Bethencourt is on the days that he's pitching, he's a pitcher. On the days that he's catching or playing the outfield, he's a hitter. They don't necessarily want to mix the two, but then again, you get into game situations where he's extremely useful and maybe you don't have to double switch or you don't have to substitute for the pitcher because he can hit. So that right now it would seem like that's their plan. Pitching-wise, I wouldn't expect to see him in many close games, at least off the bat.
It's just going to add to the fascinating nature of the Padres season this year. Another question, what kind of impact can Manny Margot and Hunter Renfro, what kind of impact can they have on the Padres in 2017?
Yeah, I like Manny Margot too. he says he doesn't care. The Padres
Good.
Say Manuel. Manny Margot sounds like a baseball name.
He could have a
big impact on their outfield defense. He's a fantastic defender. I think, like any 22-year-old rookie, he might struggle offensively, or he might have some struggles, I guess, settling in because he's obviously young. But he and Renfro are both kind of facing the same challenges at the plate. They both need to adapt to major league pitching. They've seen it for a grand total of, I think, 10 days last year. Renfro, the challenges are a little different in the sense that his on-base ability is what's in question. No one's questioning his power or his ability to hit, but he needs to lay off pitches that are outside of the zone. With Margot, he's more of a line drive guy, and the question is, can he kind of keep that batting average up? So I think both of them could end up being guys that are in the maybe the top five guys in the batting order. And they're not going to play every day. They're not. I think the Padres' goal is to maybe have four guys in the outfield who can rotate. So I would expect Margot and Renfro to each get around 400, 450, maybe 500 at bats. And I would expect them to go through some growing pains, but ultimately their high prospect rankings are both well deserved.
So what is the general feeling just in camp with they're going to break camp in about a week and a half. You know, there's some optimism with every club, just because, like, if you're not excited for opening day, then you shouldn't be playing at this level. What is the general feeling on a day-to-day basis just with this group coming into the season?
I think they're optimistic to see what they have in some of these young guys. I think the Padres' offense could surprise some people. That's obviously dependent on how some of these young guys perform. But if Renfro and Margot both develop into the prospects that the Padres hope they can be, the offense could surprise some people, and I think the difference this year, last year they had seven or eight kind of high-priced veterans who are no longer here, who really weren't going to be a part of the Padres' future. So without them in camp, the Padres, I guess everyone on this Padres roster are all the big names, at least, are guys who will contribute to the Padres' future, and I think there's some sense of optimism in that regard. Just because fans who come out to the ballpark are going to be seeing the guys that they hope are in place when the Padres contend in a couple of years.
Always interesting. Okay, AJ, thank you so much. Talk to you soon. The Rockies are getting very excited to start their regular season after a long spring. Let's catch up with Thomas Harding, see what's going on over there. I'm Allison Switter. Thomas, this is a good Rockies team that has some spots open and maybe some people knocking on the door trying to make this club. So some young players could actually have a shot to make this team. Who stands out to you the most?
Well, there's a catcher, Dustin Garneau. He's actually not young. He's 29, but you know how it is with catchers. Sometimes it takes them a while to get there. He's been up and down the last 2 years. With Tom Murphy there, a lot of people expecting him for a lot of power. When he suffered a hairline fracture forearm, there were people looking around. Are they going to go out and get a catcher? Derek Norris was sitting there, you know, looking for a job after being released by the Nationals. And the Rockies made no move in that direction, which and seen that happen before, like with Chad Bettis with his, you know, unfortunate battle with testicular cancer. They haven't gone out and got a veteran to bring in here. They've years building this system. So Dustin Garneau, very good thrower, an improving offensive player. He'll get a shot on the roster. Another guy that could force his way on is Steven Cardullo. He's a great story last year. Drafted by the Diamondbacks a number of years ago, he was about a second year in that system and ended up in independent. At one point, he played for an independent team that folded in the middle of the season. The Rockies signed him out of independent ball for spring training last year. He is in the major leagues playing some first base and some outfield. He has had an outstanding spring, two grand slams and another home run. And people are wondering, is this force his way onto an opening day roster after spending years in independent ball? Jordan Patterson came up late last season, had a few good at-bats. He's always hit for average. Looks like the power is showing up. He could show up at first base or in the outfield. And another guy pushing for the roster is Pat Valeka, whose brother Chris played in the major leagues. He's a utility infield type that has had a lot of good at-bats this spring. So you've got a lot of people competing for roster spots that came through the system, and that's something that the Rockies wanted to see, because when you have an issue, you can't always go out and find a veteran who's out on the street. Sometimes you want to, A, reward the guys who've come through your system, and B, if you've developed them, they may pop at the major league level.
Yeah, so you do want to have some of these, like, cool stories and guys that, these unlikely guys that might make the team, and that's good. A winning team, a contending team, I should say, has the foundation in order, often doesn't have that many roster spots available. And the Rockets have had some unfortunate, I don't want to call them all injuries, because, of course, Chad Bettis is you know, his issues are go beyond anything from a that goes beyond a broken bone. But they've had some problems, and so it seems like they're not really quite as strong as they were probably coming into spring training.
Not quite as strong, but you look at it this way. The news that came out on Ian Desmond was really positive. They're talking 4 to 6 weeks, which would get him back in April. Same with Tom Murphy. Chris Russell, the pitcher who had the oblique issue, he could be ready by opening day. So none of these injuries are that long-term, and I think that has something to do with not going out and getting people at the end of it. And if you look at this team in the past, like last season, if they had these injuries right before opening day, they'd have been stuck because a lot of the guys that they were developing that they believe are going to be major league players were a year from being ready. I mean, you look at the starting rotation here where they haven't gone out and gotten people because last year Tyler Anderson came into it, Jeff Hoffman, Antonio Senzatella, who looks like he may be able to skip AAA and make the major leagues, Herman Marquez, Harrison Musgrave. They built some depth here, and some of these guys are going to be more than depth. If you look at Greg Hoffman, drafted, I think 9th or 10th overall a few years ago and was traded for Tulowitzki. So the guys that are coming in are not just the Steven Cardullo, signed out of independent ball. These are high draft picks or people who've achieved a lot on the way up where you can keep a young roster. And if you get to a point where you need to make some trades, you can either trade some of those guys or go out and sign guys. And in the offseason, you have more money because you've developed your own players.
Yeah, and let's just talk a little bit about the offense. I mean, Ian Desmond, obviously, that's a huge blow, but it seems like everything else is pretty steady in that lineup, right? I mean, they've got Cargo back from the WBC, and things seem to be pretty good there.
Yeah, Nolan Arenado will be back in a couple of days, and, you know, he's huge in the middle of the lineup. A couple of things that I'm seeing here that are really encouraging. Gerardo Parra, who really struggled last year, is having a good spring, not just the numbers, but the at-bats are better. He's seeing more pitches. He's swinging at better pitches, and I think that's a big thing. Also, at the top of the lineup, Charlie Blackmon and DJ LeMahieu are just really clicking with 1-2 in the order. Blackmon, he hit for more power than ever last season, and it looks like that should be there this year. He's hitting to the gaps. He has been doing so all spring. Doesn't have a lot of home runs right now, but you get those same swings in Coors Field and they go out. And DJ LeMahieu, who led the National League in hitting, he's doing a lot of the same. And then you have Trevor Story, that the numbers aren't spectacular, but playing every other day, he's hitting for power again. So if he goes in April hitting the way he did last year, you've got a lineup that can score some runs coming out of the gate.
So how is it these last – you've covered a lot of spring trainings. I've covered a lot of spring trainings. I know those last 10 days are like you just want to tear your hair out if you do have hair. How is it just from a team standpoint, are they getting antsy to get out of there and get things going? What's the feeling that you get being around these guys?
Oh, tearing hair out. Let's see here. This year, for the first time since 08, I actually grew some, so I'll tear that out and join everyone. Yeah, this has felt like the longest spring training known to man because they started a little bit early with the World Baseball Classic. For the most part, Bud Black, although they do tend to report to the stadium a little bit earlier than other teams, Bud Black has been playing guys every other day, getting guys off the field. They're ready to start a season. I think the guys that I'm interested in all over baseball are the people like a Steven Cardullo or Jordan Patterson or Pat Valeika that are trying their best to make a team. And in the case of Valeika and Patterson, who are trying to learn first base, they're showing up early taking extra ground balls. So you've got guys who are trying to make the team. They're playing in almost every game because the starters don't play every game. And they're doing extra work at new positions. You just wonder what they're going to feel like when April gets here. It's like hopefully in the beginning of the year they don't play a lot so they can actually catch their breath.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Thomas, enjoy the rest of your day and week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Putting together their starting rotation as opening day is right around the corner. Let's catch up with Ken Gernick and find out what's happening there. I'm Allison Futter. Ken, regarding Ryu, I think that maybe we all were sort of expecting him to maybe be on a little bit of a delayed schedule, but it sounds like he's coming along a little bit faster than maybe even the Dodgers anticipated. What's the latest on him?
Well, being away 2 years with injuries, the Dodgers really didn't know what to expect from Ryu, but they weren't counting on him being ready for opening day. Now it looks like he might be. He's pitching well. He's healthy. He's probably one start behind everybody else, but now it's going to be hard for them to leave him out. They're going to have really seven guys to pick from, and they'll probably leave Julio Urias back in extended spring training as part of their lab experiment with him and his 20-year-old arm. So they want to limit his innings so he's fresher later in the season. So that leaves Alex Wood and Brandon McCarthy and Ryu for two final spots. And, it's hard to tell what they'll wind up doing. They do have an option on Wood, so they could send him down, but he sure pitched better than a demotion to AAA, would indicate. So they got a tough call to make.
And the situation with Ryu, just like you say, I mean, it's just he's been so injury-riddled in the last couple of years. Are there any precautions they're taking with him? Is it sort of like, I mean, is it just sort of, you know, as he progresses and not to really worry about limiting him and here and there? Is he kind of free to just go with however he's feeling?
Well, no. I mean, that's why he's behind everybody else as far as innings pitch, because they have brought him along slowly as a precaution. But, you can't bubble wrap him. You got to eventually, turn him loose and see what they can do. So especially if they're showing no signs of injury, which he's shown no signs of injury this spring. So he's continued to pitch and continued to bounce back healthy. And as long as that happens, they have no choice but to let him go and pitch.
So you mentioned Urias, and I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. I just thought it was interesting. I know that, like you say, they're on this kind of experimental plan with him. They're protecting him because he's so young, and they protected him so much last year also. Is there a time when this phase ends? I mean, do they have sort of a vision for when he would just be able to come in to a season, like, as a regular starter and not have to so much worry about the innings and innings limit or anything like that? Is there kind of a plan for that?
Well, I'm sure there is, but they're not telling us what it is, and they don't want to be, they don't want to make a commitment and be held to it. So whatever their plan is, it's basically limit the innings early so that he'll have them fresh later. So, the guess is that he wouldn't pitch in April for the Dodgers. He'd be kept back here, throwing maybe live BP or whatever it is to keep him prepared to get to the big leagues by the beginning of May. But again, these are just speculation, based on the schedule, not anything that they've written in stone or have told us.
Yeah, I guess they would rather him for October than April, which I'm sure is what they're envisioning at this point. Okay, so I was not prepared for this story that I saw on Eric Gagne, who is a guest instructor with the Dodgers, and he pitched in the World Baseball Classic for Canada. He actually did okay, all things considered, that he's been out of the game as long as he's been out. Was he looking to possibly make a comeback? It seemed kind of in passing, but I thought that was interesting that there was actually maybe some interest in seeing how he's doing these days.
No, he definitely wants to make a comeback. Whether clubs will take that chance with him, that's up to the 30 clubs. But he continues to throw bullpen sessions. He's been pretty impressive. I've seen worse in the big league. He's 41
yeah.
years old, and he's not, and he's not lights out like he used to be. But I think he could probably help a major league team. The players that have seen him throw his bullpen sessions here feel that way. So, like I said, someone probably could take a shot, a low risk, high reward type thing. And if nothing else, you have, basically an extra pitching coach in the bullpen, and he's worked with young pitchers now for 5 or 6 years. He knows a lot about pitching, and he knows about the mentality of being a closer. He's got things to offer, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Has he tried to make a comeback before? I guess it's I'm just looking at the amount of years that have passed. I don't remember him trying to make a comeback before. It's sort of just odd timing.
Well, he was with the Dodgers in spring training about 7 years ago, and he didn't make the team. And instead of going to the minor leagues, he went home. He was he really hadn't taken a break except for injury, and now he's taken a long break. He's pitched, you know, just occasionally for the national team of Canada, and you know, he used the WBC this year as kind of a showcase to show what he could do. And I know a couple games he pitched multiple innings, so you know, I think to show he could do that. Again, you know, I know that there have been some scouts out here watching him. I'm sure they were watching him in the WBC. And I know he'd love to come back, but, you know, that's going to be up to the teams.
No, I thought he looked pretty good. I mean, he struggled a little bit in his first outing, and then he sort of got it together. So good for him. He seemed to be pretty enthused about it after the game, too. So, okay, Ken, thanks so much. Talk to you next time.
Okay, Allison, thanks.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.